The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
Much quantum mechanics in lightning speed. So hope you get some basic idea. And what's important out of this discussion is that the energy levels in materials are discrete, and those are not what the actual material possess. So given an atom, we find that many quantum energy levels. Those are just what's possible, right? And which energy level it takes really depends on the temperature. And that's a major factor to consider. So, for example, so far, in terms of the energy levels, we have discussed, we said, well, starting from a Schrodinger equation, what determines the energy level is a potential. So for simplest case, when there's no potential constraints at all, we got this free particle that propagating in free space. And in that case, the energy does not have any constraint. It can take any continuous value. And that value depends on the wavelengths. So we have more as a classical case. In this case, the energy is momentum squared divided by 2m. Momentum is h divided by lambda squared divided by 2m, right? And sometimes we write this as h bar squared k squared 2m. Well, this k is the magnitude of the wave vector is 2 pi divided by lambda, and h bar is reduced Planck constant h divided by 2 pi. So that is a free particle. And then we discussed various other potential. And the simplest potential is the so-called potential well. I have a very rectangular potential. And in this region, I have the potential equals zero. And beyond this, I see it's very tall. So it's infinite potential. And for this case, we gave several ways of solving it. And the simplest way is I don't solve the Schrodinger equation just based on argument that I have to form standing wave. Then I can find out what's the corresponding energy levels. And the energy level is, correct me if I'm wrong, is 8 pi squared h squared n squared divided by d squared. You can check your notes and see whether my memory is right or not. So what this tell you, I think there's a mess, is that the energy of this particle inside this well is can no longer take any continuous value. It has to satisfy this relation. It has to be one of those values, possible values, because the n is the integer, could be 0, 1, just 1, 2, and any integer numbers. And we also gave a two-dimensional example, and out of that two-dimensional example, we came up with a very important concept. This is for energy level. If it's 2D, then we got a two quantum number, L and N, and then for certain energy level, it could have different wave functions that has the same energy. And those energy levels are called degenerate. So degenerate or degenerate C, that's the counting of the how many degenerate levels in one energy level. Right, this is because of the multidimensionality of the problem itself. And for electron moving around nucleus, we have three-dimensional problem. We got the three quantum numbers. And then we also discussed the possibility of the spin for electron. There is a spin plus half, minus half, and we sometimes also call this a spin up, spin down, and it's a result that you cannot get from the Schrodinger equation. It's a relativistic result. It's a reflection of the angular. It's the rotational symmetry in space, so that's not included in the Schrodinger equation. So we gave various kind of solution for different potential, flat potential, potential well, and we also gave potential of a parabolic potential. And in this case, given this potential, we say the energy is again quantized h nu m plus 1/2. And we say this one, this parabolic potential corresponds to harmonic oscillator where we have mass and spring constant. With, if you do classical harmonic oscillator, you get the frequency of this oscillator is 2 pi km square root. And to do quantum mechanics, turns out that Liu the same frequency, but in harmonic oscillator, the amplitude could be any value. The energy of the oscillator is could be any continuous value. And what quantum mechanics is telling us is no, you cannot. It can only be the multiple of that h nu. That's the energy. And this 1/2 h nu is what's there even though there's no zero temperature. There's no vibration. There's still this zero point of energy. So this is called the zero point energy. And it's not important in most cases. So that's the case when the energy profile is parabolic. And we also discussed the case when I have a nucleus and the electrons moving around. So this is a negative charge, positive charge. And in this case, the potential as a function of radial distance potential is decaying. It's getting deeper. Means the bonding is stronger as they get closer. And for this case, we obtained, without really proof, I give a hand waving without solving the equation, but you can just based on standing wave argument, you can derive at least the functionally. Now this is coefficient 13.6 eV, but the functionally is inversely proportional to this n squared. And in, for this one, because the problem is three-dimensional, this electron can move in three-dimensional space. So what we have is three quantum number, which are n, l, m. And clearly, the energy states are degenerate, and there are some constraints, l plus 1 less than n, and m less than l. And we give a few examples. So if n equals 1, then L equals 0, M equal to 0, there's only one wave function. Because what you have is that the wave function is depends on this quantum number, N, L, M. And also we should count the spin, S. That's the not included in the solution of the Schrodinger equation. We just artificially add in because that's the result from relativistic quantum mechanics. So that's for electron, you have spin. But all these three, N, L, M, different sets of combination of those allowable value will determine different wave functions. And each wave function represents one quantum mechanical state. And the reason we emphasize that is that for electrons, there is this Pauli exclusion principle, which says for each quantum mechanical state, you can only have one electron at most. You can have zero, nothing there, or one. You cannot exceed one. That's the Pauli exclusion principle. You cannot put the two electrons into the same quantum mechanical state. But electromagnetic wave photon, there's not such a constraint. Okay, this is for the particle with a spin half. That's like electrons. And so that means if I have n equals 1, I will have L can only be 0, M can only be 0 based on those conditions. So I have psi 1, 0, 0, but I have two possibilities, spin up and spin down. So I have two quantum states at this energy level, right? N equals 1, and that's according to my formula, this is a minus 13.6 electron volts relative to the vacuum. Relative to vacuum. That's how deep the energy of the electron sits in there. And then you can do N equals 2. And N equals 2, it turns out we have psi 200s. That's the and then I have psi 2. And then L equals when the n equals 2, L could equal to 0. That's my psi 200, or L equal to 1, right? So I can have 1. And then M could be minus 1, or 2, 1. M could be 0, 2, 1. M equal to 1. I have three choices, because for L equals 1, M has two, three values. Minus 1, 0, plus 1. So I have three wave functions. And this three-wave function we draw is the dumbbell-shaped orbit. That's just, say, the wave function shape of the wave functions. Those are the probable trajectories. Because we remember, wave function is where you can most probably find the electrons. Those are the probable trajectories of the electron. And and again, if I add an S, I say here I have a total of 8 quantum states, right? And this historically, this is called a 1S shell. This is 2S and 2P. And then you can say N equals 3. Then I can have, in this case, I will have, again, 3S. That's a psi 300, and 3P, that's a 3, and other things are the same, and 3D. Those symbols, SPD, are historical. That's just in chemistry people have been using. Okay, assigning the energy, different symbol for those energy levels. So this is a result out of simply recognizing that energy levels are degenerate, and each set of quantum numbers represent a quantum state, and this degeneracy Gn is 2n squared. You can check here is 2, we say 2 quantum states, and here is 8, and here is 18 quantum states. N equals 3, 2 times 9 equals 18. And this simple argument tells a lot about the atoms, the periodic table. And you can think about now, let's say the model we have here is for one proton and one electron. That's a hydrogen model, hydrogen atom model, right? And now you have helium that could have 2 electrons, lithium, 3 electrons. You may have more electrons outside, corresponding more protons inside. And this more electrons, the additional electron number, does not change the general picture very much. Okay, so if we say nothing changed, we just add more electrons, still those basic solutions, Then you can start to understand the periodic table. Because when I have, if you think about periodic table, just look at the inert atoms, right? So you start from hydrogen to helium. That's the first inert. Lithium. Anybody remember? Beryllium. Boron. Carbon. Nitrogen. Oxygen. Neon. Okay. So think about this. How many electron has? 1, 2, right? So what it does is one electron is here. Let's just say electron, all this tends to get to lowest energy states first. That's most stable. Okay? So they first fill this electron state, but there's one other space for it, because S equals plus minus, spin up, spin down. So helium will be here. But then between here and here is around 10 electron volts. That 10 electron volts is very big compared to the room temperature KT. If you put a cluster of helium atoms together, right, the kinetic energy, average energy is KT, given the temperature. That KT is 26 milli electron volts, and it's very hard to push any of this electron to the second level. It's very stable. That's why helium is very stable, right? And then you have lithium, 3 electrons, so you have first fill these 2, then comes to here, the third one. No place to go. Okay? So lithium has 1 electron, and it will be much more stable, it just lose it. Right? So very reactive. Right? Once it loses it, you have just 2 electron, very stable states. So you can continue. And what about the potassium? How many electron it has? Okay, 19. You agree? I forgot. Okay, you can just count yourself. Okay, but 19, where it should be? Here is together is 8. 10. 10. 28. So it should be somewhere here, right? That means the potassium has 9 electrons outside, right? Because this is 10, 19, so somewhere, because this level can fill 18. 9 electrons outside. But we know that's not the case. Potassium has 1 electron, right? 3 electrons. If you look at the periodic table, potassium chloride, that's 1. It's easy to lose 1 electron. It's not easy for potassium to lose 9 electrons, right? So what happened? What happens is when you have a lot of electron outside, the electron-electron interaction will change that potential. Okay? I put down a simple potential between electron and nucleus. Right? Now you have electron-electron interaction that change the potential, and what happens is that slight change in modification potential actually make this one slightly higher. Okay? It's a lift of degeneracy. Because if it's the same energy level, it's a degenerate. Now it makes it different, that degeneracy lifted. Right? So it's no longer degenerate, and this makes it higher. It happens that for potassium, the 4s here is actually lower than this 3d. So then the potassium 1 electron go here. Well, it doesn't necessarily fill all those because it's lower. The 4s is lower. So you got the 1 electron there. But if you look at the periodic table, and it's really This is 18 to maximum. It doesn't go to more than 18. In theory, you go to 4D, there will be more than 18. Right? So that's because of this degeneracy. But the point is, with this simple picture, you start to understand a lot of this basics. And that's one point of discussion. And this is about the atom itself. And now let's think about the other phenomena with the quantum. As I said, the starting of quantum mechanics, black body radiation, hydrogen, explaining hydrogen absorption. That's a lot related to radiation absorption and the emission. And so let's take a look at the absorption and the emission phenomena. And so what absorption means, a photon, because the electromagnetic wave comes in, the basic unit of electromagnetic wave is a photon, like we discussed the Einstein argument about the granular property of electromagnetic waves, right? So to have the absorption happen, this basic energy unit of photon must match the energy change of the atoms. Now, your atom energy is discrete, so that means not all photons will match that discrete change, right? So if this is the, let's say, one of the atom, the energy level of the atom or molecule, and this is an initial energy level, and you want to absorb a photon, which is H nu, let me put the nu P, means that's the photon energy come in, right? So after the absorption, this atom or electron will be going from the initial state to the final state. And those states must be allowed by the atom itself. That's quantum mechanical principle, right? So here, for example, for this hydrogen atom, initial is here. If we absorb a photon, go to here. You cannot go here because there's no energy states allowed for this electron to exist, right? So your basic condition, this is more like a parent condition, is energy conservation, but this must be satisfied based on the what's allowed by the atom itself, by the molecule, by the crystal. Those are the conditions that must be satisfied, right? And so with this condition, then you can see the absorption will be discontinuous. For example, if you take the absorption of a hydrogen atom, not a hydrogen molecule, hydrogen atom, and this hydrogen atom will already obtain this 13.6 eV divided by n squared. So if I want to say the transition is to excite the electron from n equals 1 to n equals 2, what that absorption happen? The absorption H nu equals minus 13.6 electron volts. N squared finally is 2 squared. That's a final state. Initial state is 1 squared. N equals 1 to n equals 2. Right? So what? How much this gives us? This one is about 10 electron volts. I'm not going to do the detail number, right? 4/3 of 13. 10 electron volts, what's the corresponding wavelength? You can start from frequency to wavelength or wave number. Sometimes in my book, I use different unit. That's because in reality, people use different unit. And so here, from this relation, you can calculate the frequency. And from frequency, you can calculate the wavelength, of course, is C divided by lambda P. Or in terms of wave number, this is another unit that people use, wave number. And this is the inverse, so it's a new P divided by C. And very often, people use the inverse centimeter, not meter. Okay? So sometimes I see the energy of the photon is the inverse centimeter, and you say, wait a second, that's not right unit. You can do the conversion to do it. Okay, or in terms of micron, what's the corresponding energy? So this one, 10 electron volts, and it turns out that 1 electron volt corresponds to 1.24 micron. Am I right? Somebody remembers. Okay, you can go to do the conversion. 1 electron. So this is about 10 electron volts is a shorter wavelength. It's about 0.12 micron. So that is ultraviolet region, so absorption. Right? So, and you can do various lines, absorption lines of the molecules. And this 0.12 is very short. So, normally, if you think about the emission, the hydrogen emission, although it does have a 0.12, this emission line, but it's very weak because emission is based on temperature of the object. So emission is weak, but absorption, it could be strong because the solar energy, for example, coming in, it's already peaked at 0.5 micron. So there are some ultraviolet energy that's actually absorbed by the electronic energy level of the gas in the atmosphere. And that's good for us because we don't want those ultraviolet heaters. Right? So this is the absorption of atoms. And you can think about the molecules. We discussed the molecular energy level. Ooh. It's not small move. Okay, so let's talk about the hydrogen molecule, for example. And the hydrogen molecule have two atoms. And of course, this molecule can do translational motion. It can do vibrational motion. And it can do rotational. And translational motion, the solution is a particle in a box. Because you see, let's just say a box of molecules. It's a particle in a box. That solution, we have given 1D, 2D example, and I think you have solved in your homework for 3D example. So that's a translational energy level. And then we said you can decompose this as a superposition of vibrational plus rotational. Right? See, the relative vibration of the two hydrogen atoms plus a rigid rotation, and that's as an approximation of the energy states. If you say, I want the rigorous, you do this at the same time. But this approximation is a pretty good approximation. It's just a rigid rotor plus a harmonic oscillator. So we already said for the vibration, we know the energy level is h nu n plus 1/2. Right? And for the emission or absorption of photon, we again need to match the photon energy to the final and the initial energy of this oscillator. The final energy could have been more of this modes of operation. H nu, you can think as a quanta of the basic operation. So what we have is H nu p must equal to the n final minus n initial H nu. Right? Final minus initial, how many of that modes? Basic quanta of vibration in this molecule. And this, I will make a jump, and it turns out from more, if you go to calculate probability, and the most probable is this is the 1 plus or minus 1. Okay? That's so-called selection rule. So it really say when the photon energy equals the vibrational energy itself, you get the best chance of absorption or emission. Absorption is plus 1, final energy is higher, emission is minus 1, the final energy is lower because it converts our vibrational quanta into photon. Okay? So this gives us a chance of actually measuring or estimating the spring constant of the vibration of between atoms, right? We see this, since we can measure it using the radiation spectroscopy, we can measure when the absorption happened, when the emission happened, very accurately. So we can find out from this formula, 2 pi km, what's the spring constant, right? And for hydrogen, I think my oven pointed out that my notes has a problem. The effective mass is m1 plus m2, m1, m2. So for hydrogen, it's actually half of the mass of hydrogen atom. And I use the full mass of a hydrogen atom. So effectively, my number is about 1,000, and that should be about 500. Okay, so K is, you go to check, 550 or something newton per meter. Okay, I give that number because I was trying to make up consistently, and I made an error that constant propagated. Okay, so this one gives you spring constant. This is actually a very steep spring, okay? The intermolecular potential gives you a very steep spring. And what that means, you can have, that's one of the invention, atomic force microscope. And what it does is, it's not a molecule, it's dealing with a solid. But the order of magnitude, spring, interatomic spring constant, that's the order of magnitude. Okay? So what it means is, even in solid, this atomic spring is very steep. So one idea of looking at the atoms of a solid is actually put a mechanical cantilever on top of the surface. And then if you have a very sharp tip, if that tip is comparable to atom radius, okay, then you see now your surface of the atoms is bumpy, right? And now when you use a mechanical cantilever with good tip resolution, so when you scan the surface, what it does, because this spring constant is small, then the atomic spring constant, you will not deform the atoms. What will be deformed is this cantilever, mechanical cantilever. And that mechanical cantilever deflection could be measured by, for example, translated in deflection of laser beam. Then you measure that deflection, you can map up the topology of the surface without damaging it. Okay, that seems a very basic idea. But it's a great invention. A lot of labs have this atomic force microscope. You don't always look at the atomic resolution, but you look at the nanometer scale resolution of the surface. So this serves as your basic argument. And very often when you design something, you do order magnitude analysis. And this is the first call of, what's the spring constant? Do I damage the surface? Right? So this is the vibrational modes. And we also said the rigid rotational modes is degenerate because the rotation is 2 degrees of freedom in space. It's a rigid rotation, so there's no other R variation, so it's only 2 degree freedom, right? So the rotational energy level is HB L plus 1, and as I said, they degenerate because we have 2 quantum number, L and M. And that also tells us, if I have a photon absorbing or emitting, and this one would give us HB L final plus 1 and minus initial L initial plus 1. So this is the condition for the rotational energy level to either absorb or emit photon. And again, the selection rule, that's say what's most probable is LF LI equals mass plus 1 or 0. 0 means you don't participate, right? Okay? So it's only the adjacent levels that's most probably emitting or absorbing photon. And I forgot to give a number. If you go to check notes, the wavelength of this vibration is about 2.2 micron or 2.3 micron for a hydrogen atom. Okay? And 2.2 is getting very interesting for the atmospheric science, right? Because the lots of energy is this, in this infrared region. And this rotational then, it turns out to be much weaker. You go to estimate this B is 1.8 10 to the 12 hertz. So with that, you estimate the wavelength here is of the order 100 micrometer. 100 micrometer for heat process, it's not interesting because room temperature, the peak of the Planck's law is about 10 micrometer. So it's in the far infrared region. Rotational itself is a very weak mode of absorbing or emitting. But what's interesting is because the molecule itself can have both rotation and vibration, right? So what happens inside the molecule is now when it interacts with the photon, if you just look at purely vibration, this is from n equals 1 to n equals 2, you only have one discrete line. But if it's a hydrogen atom, during that, you could also get the rotational modes participating in this process. So rotation, if we just absorb a slightly higher energy of photon, you give part of that to the vibration, the small part you give to rotation. So what you have in terms of the absorption, so you when you go from 1 to 2, you can have small other level, or the rotation can contribute back to that if the photon energy is not enough for the vibration. But that rotation can give back a little so that the absorption actually happens. So you can have, those are the rotational, vibrational combined. So if you look at the typical spectrum of absorption spectrum of the gas, it happens you have one line, that's a major vibrational line. Surrounding that vibration line, you have rotation. And rotation actually, as L increases, you have more degeneracy because the degeneracy for rotation, GL equals 2L plus 1. So as L increases, you have more rotational states that make it more possible to have that happen. So typical absorption bands around the vibrational is not just a single line, it's many lines from certain width of vibrational rotational bands. Okay? And just as one additional comment is that the CO2 atom, right? That's a big concern. So CO2, if you look at it, it's a collinear atom. And what we were talking about is a hydrogen atom, just two atoms. You have one vibrational mode, multiple of that one fundamental frequency. But for this three atom configuration, you can have different fundamental frequencies. You can have, because you can have different way of basic vibration. So you could have, for example, two carbon atom, oxygen atom, right? You can have the two carbon atom vibrating symmetrically, right? You can have the vibrate asymmetrically, right? Or you can have this way vibration, right? So you can have different modes, three basic modes. Okay, and you can have a combination of these modes to form, say, linear superposition of the modes. So it turns out that the 10 micron line around the peak of the Earth's emission is a combination modes. And because in this modes it's around 10 micron, the Earth emits at 10 micron, so it attracts a lot of the Earth emission. That's the greenhouse effect, right? The solar radiation coming in about 0.5 micron, there's no match of CO2. So the solar radiation is not absorbed, come to the surface of the Earth, but the emission from the Earth is trapped by the CO2. So if you have more CO2, you have more trapping, and that's getting the Earth hotter, because that's a basic energy balance. You got the more coming in than you can get off. That's the greenhouse. That's why people are concerned about the CO2, the greenhouse effect. So those are discussion about the individual energy levels in atoms, molecules, rotational, vibrational. And what I'm going to do next is moving on into solids. We talk about this is more like a gas phase or individual atoms. Let's think about what happens in solid. And the chapter 3, you should be able to pick up notes after the class. And if you look at the notes, the chapter, my line of presenting in the book is to first discuss crystal structure, say what makes up a crystal, and the key there is the periodicity, because a crystal is periodic arrangement of atoms, right? So we talked about the verse description, how do the bonding between the atoms. And then after that, we talk about what are the electronic energy levels by solving the Schrodinger equation for the electrons inside the periodic potential. And then after that, we talk about the lattice vibration. Here, I'm going to take a slight different approach order. I changed the order because I've been talking about the Schrodinger equation in this chapter, so I just want to continuously talk about Schrodinger equation. So we look at the electron energy level first, and then we go back, talk about the crystal structure and talk about crystal structure and the lattice vibrational energy. So, as I said, the most important thing about now crystal, the solid crystal, the most important thing is the periodic arrangement of atoms. So I want to develop a model for electron energy level in those periodic atoms, periodic structure. And so what I have is now, you see, I was discussing hydrogen atoms, or based on that, the periodic table. And now I just take a periodic crystal, so I do one dimension first. And crystal is a periodic arrangement of atoms. So I have a periodic array, one dimensional first. So periodic array of atoms that is spaced by a distance A. That's the period of this one-dimensional crystal. Right? And I want to find out what are the electron energy level in this crystal. And if I have, just to go back to think about a single atom, I already decided that, well, this is the potential shape, right? Around a single atom, electrons goes to, say, this is a, let's say this is a vacuum level, potential shape, U, right? And we obtain the energy level of electron in such a simple potential. And now I have overlapping potentially, because the atom potential can overlap here, right? I put the other atoms here. So I got the overlapping potential. But so I have several characteristics in a crystal. One of this is now the potential can overlap each other. The second is now I have a periodic variation of those potentials, right? So if I put in simple, again, 1D, so what I have here is now the potential plus A or times N, any arbitrary period as a function of X should equal to X. And what I'm saying is, I look at any point here, this point, and this point, and this point, those potentials are the same. Displacement of one period, two period, repeating same potential. Right? This is a reflection of the periodicity of the crystal. Right? And so what I need to do, if I know the shape, as I said in the last previous class, the difference between energy levels of different potentials is because I have a different shape of the potential, I have different boundary conditions. Now, if I know the shape of potential, what I add into crystal is additional periodicity. Right? So the task is essentially, say, I want to find out what are the energy of the electrons, so I go to solve the Schrodinger equation, 2m per psi dx squared plus the potential minus energy equal to zero, and this is what I want to find out. Under the periodic potential, the potential has this constraint, and in each of this period, I have the shape of the potential. So that's the definition of this problem. Right? And for this problem, there are different ways to solve it. I have given in my book one of the standard model that's called the Kronig panning model. And this model would approximate this potential with a rectangular period. Okay? And so this approximation is let's do a rectangular potential. It's just a periodic repeating. This is given, it's just I want to solve the equation, I need to know the potential shape. Right? Do you need me to talk louder? Okay. Periodic noise. So this is a rectangular shape. And what you can say, well, no. You said this is a 1 over R. It's not rectangular. Right? It gives you slight different results. But the basic features will be quite similar. Okay, the physics will be similar. So what we did in the book, which is a section 3.2, this is the section you probably should read first, is solving the Schrodinger equation under this periodic potential. Okay? But I'm not going to go through the math. That's one thing that like I said, I want to make up the in terms of speed. I have to sacrifice, and you need to read. I give you often homework that force you to read. Okay, there's one problem in homework three. You need to read through that section. But what I'm going to do is to again give you the argument what eventually you should get in terms of the energy levels. And my argument will be based on there are various ways to do it just based on chapter 2. So I give you three ways. Okay? And how we can get the solution for this energy level. One way is I start with a free electron. So you remember this is the easiest solution of Schrodinger equation, free electron. A free electron energy is h bar squared k squared 2m. Right? P squared divided by 2m. I just wrote it down. So this is one way I will make my argument. My second way is based on single potential well, right? We did a single potential well. You can see this is just a repeating of a single potential well. I can also further argue, well, I can, based on the two, what I draw the atomic potential rather than this rectangular potential. Okay? And they all lead to similarly qualitative similar results. So let me make this argument. I'll focus on these two. The other, the third is easy once you understand this one. So what I have? I have free electron propagating in free space. And you just did homework number two. Now my crystal is not a free space. I have this for electron feels the potential, right? So electrostatic potential. So electron feels the potential. And the homework number two, you solve this problem. Hopefully you all solved it. Right? I have a potential difference. So I have electron comes in to a potential, what happened? What happens is electron will have reflection and transmission. Right? And hopefully you have obtained the two different scenarios. This is U, and this is incoming electron energy E. So we have two cases when E larger than U0. That's the incoming electron energy higher. And what you get is a transmitted wave function, a reflective wave function. But both of this wave is propagating waves. Right? One is going back, the other is going forward. The amplitude is determined by the reflectivity transmissivity. Right? And then you have another possible solution, which is also give you transmitted, reflected. But it turns out this is not zero, but the transmissivity is zero. The reflectivity is one. It's everything is reflected when UE is less than U0. The energy of the incoming electron is less than the potential barrier. Everything is reflected. But the fact that, but the problem is this is not zero. So what you have, if you look at your solution carefully, you plot the wave function is on this side. So you have propagating wave comes in. On this side, this is the transmitted wave function. It's just exponential decay to zero quickly. Okay? So that's the solution. Hopefully you have got. And now I base my argument of a free electron come into a periodic potential. So this is a periodic potential. And what happens is, let's just say that this electron will experience periodic reflection, right? So this is a, let's say this is a, my periodic potential. And an electron comes in towards this direction, and now I don't have a sharp, that kind of potential barrier, but even any time I have whatever shape, that means there's a reflection of electron. So I have reflection here, and then I have transmission, this electron going here, and then at this potential, it will reflect, and again, this potential barrier, it will reflect. So what happened is, this electron they transmitted is just a hap to have getting the reflection back. And then what you have at the end is, at this point, is not just the, this way, but also the superposition of all this coming back. And if you do optics, this is very easy. That's the interference effects. Okay? So what will happen is this wave will superimpose onto each other. You got the interference effects. And now, what the energy looks like is, we say this is the energy wave vector relation. So in free space, this is the parabolic energy wave vector relation. It's not too symmetric. That's a free particle, truly free. And this is a wave vector, and this is the what the energy possible. And because of the superposition of the waves, and this is something that you probably have to wait until chapter 5, I'll discuss more of this interference effects. But just take it if you're not familiar with interference. And it happens that at every of pi over a, you got something special. And this special thing is, you got the so-called the stop band in the interference. And the what they will change is, this energy will become, this is the two energy levels. So the dashed line, so what you have is this way and dash, and this way and then merge. This is a free electron. Now with the periodic potential, you start to form the small gap, energy gap. And in this gap, you don't have any energy allowed. And this is also the principle in optics. You do interference filter, which is just a quarter wavelength plates, layers, multi-layer. Each layer is a quarter wavelength. And of the laser. So because of this, you have total reflection. And nothing gets into this periodic reflector in that region. That means the light is allowed in that periodic reflector. And here, in this region, no electrons are allowed. No electron can have this energy in the periodic structure. So here, similarly, you get 2 pi over A. You get a gap. And 3 pi over A, you get a gap. So this is an argument. This argument that you probably have to really wait until chapter 5 to understand more if you don't have any in optics, if you're not familiar with optics. This is an argument based on interference effect. But what's prominent is now I have start form energy gap. And in optics, this is called the stop band. In really the interference terminology. As I said, this argument, let's just absorb it at this moment. And same thing on this side, it's symmetric. So here you got symmetrically as the other side. And the second argument I'm going to make is based on the quantum well. So that's this picture here. So based on this picture, I know a single well, I have the standing wave this way, this way. That's when this is infinite. On the boundary, the wave function is zero. Because in this region, the wave function is zero. Right? And what you didn't solve for this specific case is, what if this is not zero? What another infinite? If this height is not infinite, that's another problem I gave in this homework number 3. If this height is not infinite, what does the solution look like? Well, the solution is similar to what we have here. Here we only have half of it. Right? You could have, in this case, you could have, if you have a finite height, and you could, for this wave, it's exponentially decaying here, but it's not zero here. It's exponential decay. And similarly, for higher energy level, this is not drawn right. I think I have to draw it some exponential decay. Okay? Inside. And then once it's above, just like what we see here, if the energy pushed above that level, then you can have extending like a free electron energy, continuous. Above this barrier, the energy could be continuous. Inside, it's discrete. Right? Min? Is that your solution?
It should go like this.
Okay. Maybe you can draw. It's going like what?
Go up, and then you go. The middle is a knot, you have to pass through that, right?
Here?
That one's.
Why don't you come here? Because he solved this kind of problems.
So you draw a line here and then go like this.
Okay. Yeah, that's the wave function. Thank you. Right? When you square it, that's a positive. Because this is a wave function itself. You square it, it's a positive. That's where you find it. So those are the solutions if the height is not infinite. That's a single well where you have exponential decays. Now I'm going to put a multiple wells. So I'm going to put another one here, another one here, another one here. And I draw the same thing. So here I got if I draw this one, the first level, right? That's my solution for this one. It's an identical solution if I don't consider interaction between the wells. Same problem. Now these two began to overlap. If this distance becomes small, in atoms, this distance small, right? Then I ran into trouble. The same point, these two electrons, the Pauli exclusion principle, cannot have the same energy, right? Well, same wave function, the eigenstates. So I cannot, when they are starting to overlap, I cannot have identical of the solutions for all the wells. So what it means is, originally, my solution, if I say the original solution is proportional to n squared, d squared, I think it is 8h squared M, oh, M is up or down. Let me just write a proportional sign. That's easier. I don't remember. So what I originally have is discrete energy level. And for each n equals 1, I have one level and two level. But now for n equals 1, I have to split that into more levels. Because for this one, when they overlap, they are not allowed. So when I'm splitting, I split this into something like what I draw here. Okay, so this one originally you can think of this as energy 1 and energy 2, and they split into more of those say discrete. There are more energy levels in each line there. They form this. From discrete, here this splitting leads to more quasi-continuous bands. Okay, so this is an argument, and now let me go back to say what you get when you go to solve the chronic panning model. That's solving the Schrodinger equation. And again, we keep making this argument so that hopefully you agree without going and solving all the equations. So here I'm talking, based on the just a picture we have on quantum well, and the most rigorous way is going to the Schrodinger equation. And the Schrodinger equation for chronic and panning model is applying this equation to this problem. Okay? So, if you use a chronic panning model, and what you do here is because it's a periodic, so if let's say this is your potential, this is a given potential, and this is a given your x coordinate, and this is a 0, this is a b, this is a, this is a b. So your period is a plus b. That's your period, right? Okay. So when you solve the Schrodinger equation for this periodic structure, and there is really extend this periodicity to infinite as approximation, very big crystal, because the size of the atoms inside is 10 to the 23rd Avogadro constant. That's the order of magnitude that we remember for bulk material. Right? So this is like an infinite. And for this infinite problem, I don't want to solve for every well. The most ideal situation is I just pick up, because this is a periodic, if I can just solve the problem in one period, then I'm clever. I don't need to solve the whole dimension problem. That's also one reason it's easy to deal with the crystals. If you do amorphous material, you're out of luck. You don't have that periodicity. Okay? So crystal, in many ways, is simple, much simpler. And so what we do is we can take one period of the problem and we solve Schrodinger equation. It's one dimensional. So you say you have two regions, different potential. In this region, potential U0. In this one, U equals 0. So you essentially have obtained the results. For this region, two function A exponential ikx plus B exponential minus ikx. And in this region, you have a similar result, C exponential kx D exponential minus kx. This is similar to what you have here. Here you have two solutions. Here you have one because you don't care about what's coming to this side, because you're looking at the transmission problem. Right? So you have really two solutions for each region. Here you have psi 1, psi 2. And you have four coefficients, AB in this region, CD in this region. Right? Think about if you solve that equation. The second order differential equation in each region. Second order differential equation always give you two undetermined coefficients. So in each region I have AB, in the other region I have CD. I need to find out this AB, CD. That's the basic scheme there. Right? Using the boundary condition. So one of these boundary conditions is clearly here. Right? That's the boundary between two regions. What I have? I have the continuity requirements. So here I have continuity psi x equal to a, 1 equals psi 2 x equal to a. So this is whatever solution I have in this region equals this region. One boundary condition. The other boundary condition we said is the continuity of the first order derivative of wave function, right? We said two boundary conditions. First, the wave function must be continuous. Second is the tangent, the gradient of wave function is continuous. So what you have is the gradient of this is continuous. Remember here I have A, B, C, D coefficients. I need four boundary conditions. Okay? So I naturally have two boundary conditions. I need to find two more boundary conditions. And that two more boundary conditions cause trouble. Because if I look at this one, I know I not wave function this one, I don't know wave function this region. Right? I don't want to solve the problem in this region. I said I want to solve only in this region. And if I look at this boundary, I know here, I don't know here. Right? So that's where the trick is. And this is where you start to take the periodicity of the potential. We said the potential is periodic. Right? The potential is periodic. And it turns out this is a mathematical theory. It's not a physics. If this one is a periodic function, it can be proven that the wave function between two periods are related. That's because this one really, if this is a periodic, we can prove, because the wave function is periodic, we can prove this is a x plus A, or let's say plus what? A plus B. Or N times A plus B, any point. That means if I'm looking at this is X point, and then I'm looking at this point, I'm looking at this point, that's the after one period, two period, three point period, right? So any period, the wave function is related to the original x point through an exponential factor ik times the distance. Say this is n a plus b. So it's this extra exponential factor. The potential itself is a period, but the wave function between these two points are related through an exponential factor. Okay? And this is the so-called block theorem. And that's a mathematical theorem. You can prove, I didn't show how to prove it in my book, but it can be proven this relation is valid. Okay? And it's through this relationship now you have the solution, because you see you know the wave function on this side at the boundary, and that means you know the wave function at this point, right? Because it's related to through the block theorem. And similarly, you know the wave function at this point, that means you know the wave function at this point. Right? You can translate. So you know that, then you can either apply to this point the continuity of wave function and the gradient, or you apply this point. Either way, you get the right result. So with this Bloch theorem, you solve your problem in only one period, and you can determine this ABCD. And of course, for all these problems, most often you're not interested in determining ABCD, you're interested in determining this E, that's the energy. This is the eigenvalue inside, that's what we want to find out. And it turns out that this ABC, that's same case. You have four equations, but all the other, the right-hand side of the equation is zero. The left-hand side is ABCD, so it's a degenerate problem. You have to have the determinant of all these coefficients zero. And with that, you solve the eigenvalue, energy eigenvalue. Okay, so this is the scheme of presentation in the book, and you have to read through the detailed math there. And now let me show you what this scheme will look like in terms of the energy solution. And in terms of energy solution, this is that wave vector K. I've not explained what is that K. Okay? And this K has similarity to what we have here, K. Okay? H squared K. Something like the wave vector. And then this will be the energy. And it turns out the energy solution is a periodic. It's basically the periodic function. It's not necessarily a sign. That's the first band. And then second band again. That's, you have to trust, this is a math. This is what you get. And this line here, if I plot a dashed line, that looks like what I show for the free electron. Where is that join there? I'm sure this is the free electron line there. And I'm drawing this as a dashed line. This is like the free electron. And so, if you just look at this region and this region, this will look at this region and this region. Okay? But I have really, in terms of the mathematical solution, it extends through the whole allowable wave vector. And I will show that this is equivalent. So, any of this period is equivalent. Okay, and this happens at pi over a, and it turns out this period is the same as this period, and all this period are equivalent. So essentially, it's only in this region that you need. Okay, so how you show that? And to show this, we have to look at the how I can determine this K here. This K. I have not determined this K. I was a little bit vague in that. And to determine this K, I say this is my lattice. This is a one-dimensional crystal here. So this is atom 1, this is atom 2, atom 3, and I see in this chain of atom I have N. That N is very big, right, in typical crystals. Right? So really in most of the application, this N doesn't matter because it's so big. So one way to go through this is, let's say the N point doesn't matter. So one way is really collect this N point from 1 to N, just make them the same point. So make the whole structure cyclic. And this is the so-called the periodic boundary condition. Periodic boundary condition. It's a von Kármán periodic boundary condition. Or sometimes it's also called Born von Kármán. Who knows Kármán, von Kármán? Fluid mechanics, right? Yeah, he did the first solid states. And then he changed his field to fluid mechanics. And Jet Propulsion Lab, LASA. That's, I think, is it von Kármán there? I think it was von Kármán. Yeah, von Kármán really switched fluid mechanics and started lots of aeronautics work. So what it does is say, well, let's put the endpoint, one point, say, periodic. So what it requires then is point one at any x, must the wave function must repeat itself. So it's n plus a plus b. That must be repeating itself. Okay? And with this repeating and the block theory, you can say if you apply the block theorem to this one, what do you get? Exponential ik n times a plus b equals 1. And this will give me what are the law. What's possible then? With this condition, what's possible for that k? Cyclic exponential k, and that means this guy has to be multiple of 2 pi, right? Sine x, cosine x, e I x, right? So this means k times n a plus b must be equals 2 pi times whatever n, this n must be integer 0 plus minus 1. And that means this k, or now it's an n value, is 2 pi n, and capital N a plus b. And capital N is really the length of the crystal, L, right? Okay? And so these are the allowable wave vectors, and I have not plotted this. I did not discuss this. I say what it means, this allowable wave vector, lot of allowable wave vector, if you count from minus pi to over a to plus pi over a, there are n values of k. So there are, those are allowable wave vectors for the solution. So at the end, if you take this allowable wave vector and you substitute that, if I displace by this allowable wave vector k plus 2 pi a or 2 pi any of the integer l, it turns out I substitute it back into block theorem, is that those solution, this point is the same as I shift back to 2 pi, so 2 pi over a. So I would shift this point to, where is that 2 pi over a? So it must be some, it's here. Okay, those points are equivalent. So I only can just forget about this, just look at this region. That's the energy spectrum people typically plot of the electrons in solids. Okay? So with that, I'll stop here, and hopefully you can start reading. And most of the homework 3 is still on chapter 2. On chapter 3, there's only one homework that's related to chronic panning model. Okay? Your homework and...
homework's
Yes, the